thought it was a complete and utter disaster. And frankly, I'm a little bit concerned about Mike Gundy's health. Like, I've never seen anything like this before in my entire life. How can you be one of the nation's top 10 coaches? And I will argue that till the day I will die on that hill, that he's a top 10 coach in the country. But when he steps into a bedlam scenario, it's like he forgets how to play football. Like, I don't understand it. For the life of me, I can't understand how that coach can win so many games, develop so many players, write great game plans and great execution, big bowl moments. Mike Gundy has literally done it all in college football but win a national championship. But he steps foot in Bedlam at home or in Norman and completely falls apart. Some kid in a psych class somewhere should write a paper about what has happened to Mike Gundy in Bedlam games over the last 18 years. It's an absolute collapse. I've never seen anything like it. 28 points you're down by on the road against your rival in a hostile environment, and he's out there kicking field goals and punting the ball at midfield. It was insane. What somebody should have done is from the medical staff, maybe assisted him up into the equipment or training room for treatment in the middle of the second quarter. I don't understand it. Not to mention, and to get off mic for a second, because the players also are responsible for this. You would have had to sedate me on Wednesday before that game. Give me a tranquilizer so I can get some sleep. You're telling me that you're going to show up to play what is the worst defensive front in the conference, period, and just allow them to beat you senseless for four quarters. It was like watching someone, the offensive line for Oklahoma State was like a strainer. It was like they were purposely leaking through, letting people through the line of scrimmage. Sanders looked like his jersey was green in the first quarter, like a leprechaun. I was blown away by it all on how that game ended up the way that it did.
Mark, this is after he's had a couple of days to cool off. I hate to stop Sam when he's on a roll, but Marcus, what are your thoughts?
You sure that OSU had the worst coach in the game? I'm being serious.
I mean, you could argue.
I got a lot on OU. I got a lot on OSU, too. The conservatism of Mike Gundy, I almost feel like he believed that he was going to lose the game going in. They really didn't have a lot of pace to the comeback. And, my God, I thought OU was about to lay down. I thought OU was about to lay down in the third and fourth quarter and give Oklahoma State a win in that game, and I think they're kind of lucky that they did. Horrible clock management at the end of the first half for OU. Don't use their timeouts well. I don't know why they think they're going to take them to the locker room. They got three timeouts going down the field to try to get into range. Then they end up throwing an interception, which could have been very big points. The fact that they had 59 yards in the entire second half, I did this research yesterday before Jenny put it in her column today, but no drive that lasted longer than a minute and 27 seconds from the second, third, and fourth quarter. And if I see Brent Venables, if I'm Joe Castiglione and I see Brent Venables under a tent talking to his defense and not managing the game anymore, I'm going to tell you I would have a list of stuff in the offseason that I say this has got to change today, right, or we're not going to have a very good football team. Brent Venables is still a coordinator. He's not a good head coach. He doesn't manage the game very well. And that was ridiculous. I mean, the OU offense goes 0-for-7 in the third quarter, throwing the football, and they continue to be terrible on third down it blows my mind how bad that was. And OU was really lucky. I thought Spencer Sanders played one of his worst games. Maybe it was because he's hurt. Maybe it was just because he tried to do too much. But all of the things that he did on offense and OSU's failure to try to do anything to establish the run, they did have their second run of the season against a Division I opponent for over 20 yards. But I'm just telling you, look, it is not going well for OU. It's not going well for OSU. It was two bad football teams on Saturday night, and they played a game that was, to me, bizarrely poor.
I think that Sanders' biggest problem was he got about, 30 seconds into the game and realized that he was the only dude that got off the bus. I think that was probably the thing that bothered him more than anything, is when he realized that he was the only one competing at a high level. He clearly is nicked. There's no doubt about it. But given some sort of environment where he could have at least managed the game, he 100% at 70% is the better option for Oklahoma State. But he was unable to manage the game because it was a complete and utter collapse from the very beginning. They should have taken him out of the game midway through the second quarter, because no one was out there with the focus on protecting that kid. It was a hostile environment for him of the biggest magnitude for the entire game. I felt so bad because he was out there trying. He went from, let me get in here and move the chains, that's all they were going to ask him to do, to being down 28 points, and now they're asking him to drop back 7 steps and throw the football down the field with an offensive line in front of him that clearly hates the kid. Like, I don't know what anybody wanted out of him. As far as the Venables thing for you, you're 100% spot on. Like, some you want to get on Levy for it? Fine, he's the coordinator. But he's the coordinator. You can't tell me as a head coach, you're out there watching this dude just run off the field a minute and 20 seconds consecutively for an entire game. No one said, hey, someone let the quarterback know not to snap the ball until we get down to about 6 or 7 seconds. That wasn't a conversation that was had. This is Division I football. Like, the way it was an unbelievably poor game on both sidelines. Like, I felt like we all should have been compensated for our time. Someone send me some money for watching that game. That's how bad that was. I have no clue what Venables was doing. Or the offensive staff. There's a whole bunch of dudes with headsets on, Mark. Like, if you and I are coaching a high school team in the slot, you're going to say, hey, Sam, I get that you want to be aggressive, but maybe we should go ahead and sit on the almost 30-point lead that we have. What are you – not to mention your offensive line has been incredible for 2 weeks. Eric Gray's one of the best running backs in the country over the last 2 weeks. What do you mean you're not excited to run the ball 65 or 70% of the time to close out the game? It doesn't make any sense at all.
As with you know, Oklahoma State as well, player deserves a whole lot of blame. Dylan Gabriel didn't play very well for the rest of the second half. They couldn't throw the football. But I just don't understand the time management, Craig. I mean, it is poor. It makes me. I don't know that this ever changes. If you don't have that head coach, if you don't have that light going on in your head, 11 games into your coaching career, that I need to be a head coach and I need to fix these things. And some of the things that I wrote down after the West Virginia game, and some of the things that I wrote down after the Oklahoma State game, looks like something that you would send to a coach in the ninth grade, trying to critique their performance.
Correct.
I mean, it's absurd. It was terrible. And again, trying to speed things up and not dedicating running the football to a team that was beat up, an Oklahoma State in the defensive front, didn't have their guys, and then getting outplayed 34 plays to 12 or 13 in the fourth quarter. There's just OU's got to be thinking how lucky they are today to win the game, that they just got off to a great start at the beginning of the contest. But the fact that they can't figure out what happens when it goes into the ditch is a huge indictment on this coaching staff from top to bottom.
The OU defense did some good things with the 4 interceptions, 6 sacks, 7 pass breakups, 12 quarterback hurries. But if you really want to do your defense some favors, what would you do? Number one, you want to limit the time OSU has to work with, and number two, limit their possessions. They had the ball 19 times, and like you said, Marcus, your longest possession after halftime, your longest possession was a minute 27, as Mark said. And Jenny also had that none of their possessions in the second half, the OU possessions, lasted longer than 90 seconds. And you have an offense that was 1 for 14 on third down in the game. All right? So your offense has established that they can't move the ball. 1 for 14 on third down. The least you can do is take some time off the clock and give OSU fewer possessions. And I tell you guys, the upset of the night was that OSU did have the ball 19 times and only scored 1 touchdown because they moved the football after the first quarter.
They had some bad breaks and they had some bad turnovers in the red zone. I think I got this right. I looked at the participation chart. OSU only played 6 offensive linemen in the entire game. Now they've got 4 guys that have experience, or 5 guys that have experience up there, but they got no depth, man. They can't put anybody else in the game. Eli Russ is the only backup lineman that played in the game for Oklahoma State, and they haven't done a really good job recruiting. I wrote down some of the guys that they had committed. 1, 2, 3, 4 aren't on the team anymore after being in the last 2 recruiting classes. They're in big trouble on the offensive line.
Yeah,
big trouble.
It was an absolute mess, and you know, just the inability to establish any sort of presence up front. Like, everybody's getting all over Casey Dunn throughout the game. Fire Casey Dunn. I'm like, first of all, he is by far the best recruiter on this team, and it's not even close. Oklahoma State, it's a guarantee. You can call it wide receiver U if you want to. It is a guarantee that they're going to have five dudes that can play that game on a high level, and one of them is going to be a national star. That's what Casey Dunn has done to Oklahoma State football. And then, so then you're going to rip him for what the play calling is. It's like you don't, if your offensive line is blocking well 3 out of 10 times, right? They're getting all their blocks. You have five guys that are blocking 3 out of 10 times well. What plays are you calling? What exactly do you want him to do? There's no calling plays for that. What you do is you snap the ball and you get it out of the quarterback's hands as fast as possible. You roll them outside the pocket. So let's say you do call a deep pass down the field, right? You call to some where you want two receivers on the edges running deep routes. Well, what you've also do because your line sucks is you've limited the amount of receivers you can have on the field. So five wide receivers, not an option for Oklahoma State because they can't protect. Four wide receivers for Oklahoma State, not an option because they need a tight end and they need a back in the backfield to clean up the spillage from the offensive line. So now your 3rd and 13 deep ball play, you've got three receivers out there doing it with an Oklahoma defense that's very capable of covering three guys out in space. Every defense is on 13. They had no options to do that. So before you get on Casey Dunn, understand that there's some things in football that have got to happen to have success, and good offensive line play is one of them. If you don't have it, you can't run your offense. I mean, that's just how it works. He can't call plays in the conditions he was under.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL Fan Festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next correction, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Who saved the day? Sponsored by Triple Play Home Services. Local pros who saved the day for homeowners with HVAC and plumbing needs. Don't delay. Call 888-76-TRIPLE-PLAY or go to calltripleplay.com.
Snap comes. Handoff goes. Right-hand side is DeMicardo. Down he goes in the 23. So you got to get your field goal unit out. 15 seconds. Plenty of time. Take your time, fellas. You're 10. Relax. You're at 9. Griffin Kale. 41-yard effort. Middle of the field for the win. Snap. Hold. Kick. Griffin Kale. Plenty on it. And Griffin Kale has nailed it. Bow! How about that, boys? The Frogs survive here in Waco. Kale nails it.
And that was the TCU Radio Network. Brian Eskridge on the call. As I've said, I got to listen to the second half of TCU K-State earlier this year. The guy does a heck of a job. That is who saved the day. And who it was Griffin Kale with the 40-yard field goal as time expired. Who saved the day? Brought to you by Triple Play Home Services, local pros who saved the day for homeowners with HVAC and plumbing needs. Don't delay. Call 888-76-TRIPLE-PLAY or go to calltripleplay.com.
Guys, can you spell before, that? Wow, what was that? Can you spell that? What he said when that field goal went through?
Have you got all the bedlam out of your system, Sam, or do you got any more parting shots before we move on to TCU here?
No, I'm ready to move past it. I would tell you that expect just moments of outburst throughout the next 3 hours. I can only imagine that we'll open Mark's
soccer
show
match
with that. Yeah, we're talking soccer too. This morning was an incredible start to the World Cup. So yeah, it's going to be a great show. But yeah, I'm going to have small breakdowns throughout the day.
Now, hey, that TCU team is well coached. No, that's a, that's a well-coached TCU team because, you know, they found ways to win games in which they've been out of completely. And to be able to have the discipline to run the field goal unit out there with time running down like that and him to hit a kick after he'd missed an extra point was fantastic.
That's what I was going to say. He missed that extra point on the touchdown that put him up 20-14 back in the third quarter. So they had to go for two. When they scored with 2:07 to go, DeMercado scores on a 3-yard touchdown run. 2:07 left, so they got to go for two for the tie. Obviously, that failed, but then he turns out to be the hero with the 40-yard field goal at the end. This magical season, Sam, in Fort Worth, huh?
Yeah, no, it's been incredible. You know, I'm not going to lie. When Dyke said we practice that all the time, in my brain I'm thinking that's some BS. There's no way that you practice just chaos like that. No one practices just randomly sprinting your field goal team out there, not setting up and just kicking in. As you know, like it just seems like that. I thought it was poor clock management, and they're in this bad situation. If you would have paused it right before that boy's foot hit that ball and said to me, "What are the chances he makes his field goal?" I would have said, "There are no chance." Like, he didn't even set himself up. He didn't even step the thing off. And then when you go back and watch the replay, you realize, oh, yeah, no, they absolutely have just practiced that. Because the offensive line, everybody got up the field immediately. The offensive line lines up. The holder waited till they lined up. He got down. The kicker purposely coming off the sideline, trailing behind everybody to see it all set up. When the kicker got up to where he was going to go, he just stopped dead where he was supposed to be at and just kicked the ball beautifully. I 100% believe that that is something that they have practiced every single week because it went flawless for them. The rest of us around the country looking at it going, oh, my God, how could you not manage the clock better? Why didn't you clock it the first time? Like, we're all freaking out like this guy's an idiot. But he's smarter than the rest of us. Right? He had it planned out, and they were calm, cool, and collected. That kicker took a nice deep breath before the ball was snapped. Next thing you know, it's perfect execution. That is a great football team that Sonny Dykes has down there in Fort Worth. And the thing that probably bothers me more than anything moving forward is I'm frustrated because I don't know that they're going to be able to show how good they are down the road here if they can't get everybody healthy. They got to get to be 100%. And the biggest difference between a great TCU team, which we have this season, and a team in Columbus and the team down there in Georgia and the team out there in Clemson, typically in Alabama, is nothing but depth. Right. Although the TCU team showed us they had some depth in this game as they needed a bunch of backups and role players to get in and finish that thing down the stretch. I just really hope that TCU can be the team that represents the Big 12 in the semifinal game. And I'm feeling more optimistic than I ever have in regards to this conference's chances of winning one of those if they play anybody but Georgia. Right.
I don't know. I mean, Ohio State didn't look very good on Saturday and everybody else kind of has their flaws. I'll tell you who looks really good right now is USC. I mean, that defense just somehow finds ways to make force the other team into turnovers. And Caleb Williams is a damn
magician,
superstar.
Right.
I watched that till the very end. It was a rough night if you saw OU's quarterback play and then saw the other quarterback play going on around there, because I got some numbers for you guys. Rattler, Williams, and Mordecai in the month of November, 31 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. And they threw for a combined 908 yards on Saturday night between Spencer Rattler and Caleb Williams.
Well, USC was the big winner of the weekend, right? Because, I mean, TCU survives. Michigan also survived very late against Illinois with a late field goal. Ohio State, like Mark said, I mean, they were in a dogfight all the way down to the end against Maryland. And then Georgia didn't exactly cruise over Kentucky, guys. So USC ends up, they were number 5 in the AP poll. I think when the college football playoff poll comes out, I think they're probably going to be number 5 there and in perfect position to move up. But they do have a couple of tough games left with Notre Dame and then the title game in the Pac-12, right, Sam?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
Yeah, they're in good shape.
And you got to here's the thing that you wonder about USC is, and Riley, you know, I don't know what kind of a culture guy he is. Just based off of what we saw at Oklahoma, I don't know that it's like how much of the foundation has been built where that team is going to be able to handle success down the road here. Because now you all need to come together, right? This is when all of a sudden you're not doing the things, you know, outside of of football like you maybe were in the first 3 weeks of the season. You're not going to the bar after a Saturday game. You're not going out on Thursday night. You're not easily found on campus at parties and things like that. You really start to dial it in and bring in everybody is together with the decisions that they're making in regards to the team. You know, it's been a long time since USC dealt with this kind of success. How much leadership do they have on that field? And I have a hard time looking at Caleb Williams and saying that he's the most important part of what their leadership group needs to look like, because he is so, like, there's an arrogance about that kid. Like, he's unlikable. Like, I have a hard time. I think that I would wonder how his teammates feel about him at times.
Right? It ain't all roses, I promise you.
Because he's just really kind of a tool. Like, even the way that he was in the at the end of that game,
all by himself, nobody with him.
Yeah, nobody with him. And then, like, the way that he talked to the media, and I'm like, I don't like you, kid. Like, you're not likable. So I just wonder, you know, when the fur starts to fly, that Notre Dame, Craig, I mean, you've seen a few more of those games than I have, but what is the guarantee? That it's going to be physical and it's going to be fast, right? And it's going to be an intense matchup. Notre Dame can drag that thing out and get close in the fourth quarter when Caleb Williams needs to dig down deep. Is he going to have the rest of the team with him? I don't know. I don't know that about him. But, man, he's done an incredible job this year. He's absolutely somebody that should be in New York for the Heisman Trophy ceremony this year. He is a magician. And when I told – I will never forget telling Rufus Alexander, I told him, the most important thing for Oklahoma moving forward at this point is making sure that 13 take snaps for them next year. And Rufus looked at me straight in the face and said, that's not what's the most important to us. This is Oklahoma. We're bigger. We're bigger than that. We're bigger than one player. And I said, I would typically agree with that, but maybe not in this situation, because that kid is special, and they need to keep him on campus. And I promise you, if you go back and ask that staff, are you happy with the way you handled this situation, or do you wish you would have waited a little bit to bring in Gabriel, or maybe waited until Caleb Williams made his decision to even have a conversation? I bet you they probably think, or would think, yes, that we wish we would have maybe paused just a second or came up with a plan that was going to look more like what he wanted it to look like. Because at the end of the day, Mark, and you have been talking about this all year, if you're OU, you're going to commit to the way college football is today, or you are not. You're going to commit and be relevant, or you're not going to commit and you're going to be irrelevant winning 8 or 9 games in the SEC. You have to find a way to play the game that these kids are playing today. And bottom line, that has to do with finances and NIL.
I don't think they had a shot at him. I think he was gone. I think he was gone from the very beginning. I just don't think that, you know, there were some overtures made between his dad and OU that were ridiculous. I think even if they would have met those demands were, that it wouldn't have happened. But he's pretty good.
He's special. That's a special player.
I think, Craig, I think he's an all pro.
Yeah. No, I mean, the guy can play. That's not even debatable, right? Now, as far as winning these next two games, though, guys, I'm telling you, that Notre Dame pass defense is not that bad, guys, you know? And here's a Notre Dame team that beat Clemson 35-14. So, USC is right on the doorstep of the playoffs. But I don't think it's any given that they get there.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's a guarantee that they get there either. I mean, there's football to be played for sure. But, man, if they get there, you know how Lincoln is with a month of preparation offensively. He's a real handful. And when you have Caleb Williams playing at the level that he is, I mean, they're going to have something to offer. There's no doubt. They're going to have to play great football down the stretch here to get it done. But he has done exactly what he said he could do at USC, and he did it in less than a season. It's unbelievable.
So Marcus, as you handicap the top six or so now, I mean, put LSU, I think we all agree probably that USC is going to be number five, LSU is going to be sitting there at number six. What do you think, Mark, as far as how you think it's going to shake out?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we were really close this weekend to complete and total chaos. I mean, TCU field goal and then an improbable Michigan win late against Illinois, and Ohio State certainly wasn't very good on the road. I mean, those two teams that they played aren't bad. I mean, those are the type of teams that pull these kind of upsets late in the year. We don't watch a lot of Maryland football and Illinois football, but there are good aspects about both of those teams. So, K-State will be a load for TCU in the Big 12 championship game. That's there. I think Tennessee is done with that loss and the way that it happened.
Hooker's out for the season now, too.
Yeah,
right?
Hooker's done. Torn ACL, non-contact play was bad. I meant to look at this before I came to the show, but I didn't. I think that USC in the championship game would probably be Oregon, but a chance to be Washington. Is that right?
Oregon wins, it's Oregon. If Oregon loses, I need an abacus because there's all kinds of tiebreaker. Washington beat Oregon, but Utah could also finish in a tie with all those two lost teams.
It all goes through next week. Ducks go to Oregon State, which is
They played really good on defense here lately.
Yeah.
Oregon's in the driver's seat, but it's not guaranteed. They have to win.
See, that's a tough game, too. I mean, the Pac-12, you know, 2 weeks ago had everything looking really, really good to potentially get a team in the playoffs, and it might not now. You know, TCU,
if Oregon loses, they're going to need Washington to lose or UCLA to beat Cal in order to make it.
I mean, the people that clearly look the best right now are Michigan and Ohio State because they don't have much of a challenge in the Big Ten championship game, and there's a really good chance that league, there's just no more game for them to play.
Right.
One of them's going to lose, and that's going to be their last game, and then the other one's going to win and play, you know, a team that they'll be 20-point favorites over in the championship game, and I think they're both going to get in.
And then
over Clemson as an ACC champ. But that'd be a heck of a debate.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.
But Michigan, we saw Blake Corum go down second quarter. He didn't come back into the game, guys. If Michigan doesn't have him, they're not the same team either.
Correct. Yeah, that would be a catastrophic loss for them. I don't know that they bounce back from a situation like that. They need to play this weekend or they get their butts beat by Ohio State. That's a terrible loss for them late in that game. It looked like a hyperextension. Like, obviously, I'm no doctor, not trying to speculate here. But I didn't – when I watched it happen, I'm thinking to myself – it didn't look like it was a complete like it was intact. You know, I think he just kind of got up on his toe in a weird position. The fact that he was trying to warm back up, you know, throughout the course of the game probably is a good sign for him. He's going to deal with some stiffness and some soreness in this next couple of days. He'll keep him off of it, but I think he'll be ready to go. The question is he 100%? Is he 80%, 90%? Because that kid is as dynamic of a back as you're going to find in college football, and he makes his team better. Like, he makes his offensive line better with his patience and with his demeanor. We've seen it in Oklahoma for years and years and years now with running backs like Kennedy Brooks and Ramondre Stevenson, and even Mixon at times, I think, has a patient level about him that allowed the offensive line to develop over the years. So that kid is good. He's really good. He's an NFL player, no doubt about it. They got to get him back and healthy. Although, as an Ohioan, that's the last thing I want.
Dallas Cowboys, game of the week at Minnesota. The Vikings come in with a 7-game winning streak, Marcus, and it turned into not only the Dak Prescott show, but the Dallas defense just putting on a show yesterday.
I told you guys last week that was Cowboys all the way, recency bias. You got Buffalo going losing to Minnesota in a game that is, that the Vikings just had a scratch claw, come back, do everything they could, celebrating in the plane on the way home. And then the Cowboys having their worst game of the season, playing really poorly, yet dominating the game for three quarters, and then just kind of giving it up because they worship Aaron Rodgers more than he should be, and then you just have this turnaround result. So I think it was way turned around, way more than I thought it might be, in terms of the Cowboys' margin of victory, which is their largest ever on the road. So great performance from Dallas. I think the more and more that we see Philadelphia starting to get figured out by teams and slowing down their offense, the Cowboys have got a legit shot to be in there.
You know, the one thing I can appreciate about Jerry Jones is he very much gives the vibe that I'll cut your ass, right? Like, there's some NFL owners out there that I think are very – I mean, their team sucks, and it is what it is. We'll go to the game. But I'm not going to dive into the football aspect of it. When we're good, we're good. When we're bad. It is what it is. It's all business, right? Jerry Jones is all about the football aspect. So when it comes to – Dak Prescott's performance this weekend, I thought it was great to see him kind of bounce back and get in the driver's seat, because I'm sure Jerry Jones is looking at him in the facility unlike he has ever looked at him before. Dak Prescott, no question, has got to be feeling some sort of pressure from that front office at this point to play better football. So it was good to see him get out there and respond, because the Cooper Rush seemed very capable of just running the offense. and letting that defense do what they're doing and staying on the field and winning the time of possession, that was a method that allowed the Cowboys to win a bunch of games with their backup quarterback in the mix. So for Prescott to get in there and perform at the level that he did, as explosively as he did, winning the game for his team, I think that's what you pay him, whatever the amount of money they paid him for, right? I mean, that's it. So he looked like he probably should look, depending on or based off of what he's making these days in the NFL. He looked that good this week, and it was good to see him step out of the dark.
Well, and speaking of Cooper Great. Rush, he's one of the quarterbacks that that had beaten the Minnesota Vikings. Like I said, the Cowboys just have their number. They're 8-2, you know, against I'm drawing a blank on the Minnesota quarterback.
Kirk Cousins.
They're 8-2 against him, but Dak was 4-1 against Cousins. But it's not just that they own Cousins. Against the Vikings, Cooper Rush beat the Vikings. So did Andy Dalton. Andy Dalton's another backup quarterback for Dallas. And then, like I said, Dak, he was 4-1 against Cousins, and Dak did play well yesterday with the 22-for-25. But some of the throws, Marcus, that he had to make, I mean, he dumps it off to Tony Pollard, and it's 30-yard touchdown. He gets Pollard on a linebacker, and it's like 60-yard touchdown. I mean, a lot of these throws weren't really that hard to make, but when all is said and done, you look at Tony Pollard, the day he had, first Cowboy back with 100 receiving yards, 50 yards rushing, same game since Emmitt. Pollard and Zeke each scored 2 touchdowns. The defense, 7 sacks, most in a game since 2008. It was a magical day for the Cowboys. So how seriously are we to take them, Mark?
Serious. They're a threat to get to the Super Bowl. I think the NFC is clearly weaker than the AFC. It's a bloodbath over there. There's a lot of good teams. Chiefs had a big come from behind win last night to get themselves to 8-2, or there would be what, 5 teams at 7-3. So that's big for the home field advantage for Kansas City. They had it last year and didn't get to the Super Bowl. So I think that the AFC is going to be tough, but this is the NFL. It's great every week, man. Teams got to stay healthy, and that's the most important part, I think, in determining who's going to get to the Super Bowl.
Okay, last night, real quick, got to get your thoughts on the other game of the week, Kansas City Chargers. Very entertaining Sunday night game. Sam, and it comes down to Kansas City with the ball, and it only takes them, what, a minute and 15 to drive down the field. Mahomes to Kelce, their third touchdown of the game with 31 seconds to go, and the Chiefs get the victory over the Chargers. What'd you see, Sam?
I mean, Patrick Mahomes is arguably the best quarterback in the league and one of the better leaders you're going to find in football, right? He is an absolute magician with the ball in his hand. There's nothing that he doesn't believe he can accomplish, and right now his body aligns up with his mind, and that's what you're going to get. You're going to get magnificent performances like you saw last night. He is a one-man wrecking crew, and he's got the support system around him that is exceptional. Andy Reid has built that team in the way that he wants to. Their offensive line gets better each and every week. I like Clyde Edwards-Helaire gets better each and every week. Obviously, you're going to miss a guy like, the cheetah. What is his name?
Tyreek Hill. Excuse me.
You're going to miss Tyreek Hill, but they seem to have been overcoming some of the issues they had earlier this season. They're really good, man, and I think that Chargers team is pretty good. I question the Chargers coaching staff at times and how ready they are to play football every Sunday, but yeah, that's a good football team that they beat, and another just great primetime game for the NFL to kind of display one of their stars for sure.
Marcus, what'd you think?
Yeah, I mean, Mahomes is a machine. Isaiah Pacheco is kind of winning that running back spot there. That was a nice draft pick for them in Kansas City. What more did you expect of the game between those two players last night? The ball that Herbert threw to Keenan Allen, what a bullet that was,
yeah.
Man. He made an adjustment because he was being defended well by the boundary, and Williams made a move and stepped in there. The Chargers all have a shot if they can keep some of those guys on the field, but Mike Williams played last night and then went out of the game. But that's a good team.
Yeah, he only caught one pass and then left early, so that hurt him. That was the first time they've had him back with Keenan Allen. And on the Chiefs side of it, like you say, Edwards-Helaire, he goes down with an ankle injury in the first quarter. Kadarius Toney suffered a hamstring in the third quarter. All right, they lost Thornhill to a calf injury. So the Chiefs had their own injury problems yesterday too. And Mark, I'm a little surprised that the Chiefs didn't run the ball more, because that's the Chargers are hard pressed to stop the run. The only way they can stop it is to devote, you know, more and more people to the line of scrimmage, and then Mahomes just curves you up even more. But like you said, Pacheco, career high, 107 yards there. So, yeah, they looked really, really good. Anything else stand out to you NFL-wise, Sam?
Not necessarily. I'm going to be honest with you. I struggled Saturday night significantly. Sunday was a bit of a blur because I was in recovery mode from the Bedlam beatdown. So I didn't get to take in as much NFL action as I normally would this weekend.
All right, Marcus, anything else for you from yesterday?
Lions have won three in a row for the first time since 2017. I don't know if that's, you know, super noteworthy.
Bills got the win over Cleveland and Detroit. Yeah.
Broncos have Nathaniel Hackett give up play-calling responsibilities, and it's still all bad on that team. They lose to the Raiders. That was pretty poor at home, although I don't think that the Broncos should wear any other helmets than the one with the D on it and the Mustang and the Bronco in the middle of it.
It's a good look. It's a good look. I'll say
that was good. Too good to lose a game like that.
I think the Steelers have their quarterback, right? I think that Pickett is probably given some protection and maybe some stability along that offensive front. I think that kid's got some real potential.
Offensive line. Yeah, offensive line kills him. I tell you, Joe Burrow, though, how good is he, guys? I mean, four touchdown passes, three of them to Samaje Perine. Steelers played him tough, but the Bengals now have won four out of five, guys. They're 6-4, so don't count out the Cincinnati Bengals.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamin's podcast wherever you listen.